Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Let's kick off today's show with our topic, which is professional development. So I'm finding in all of my circles and when I'm networking that professional development is on everyone's mind. And it's probably because the business landscape is changing so quickly. And I love that companies are kind of coming up with new and interesting ways that they can focus on helping their employees develop their skills and competencies. So my special guest today has a lot to share on the topic. His name is Stephen Waddington. He is a partner and chief engagement officer at Ketchum in London. And Stephen is responsible for driving the integration and innovation of digital and social capabilities throughout the Ketchum network globally. Stephen's here to share his journey, and he's going to give you some advice on professional development. Stephen, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you, Deirdre. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I'd like to start with your title and your role. So I'm finding that new titles are popping up everywhere, and it's because organizations are changing to adjust to the customers or clients that they're serving. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your role at Ketchum as a chief engagement officer.
Yeah, it's very straightforward, actually. So much of public relations is about engagement between an organization and its publics in the very broadest sense. And so that's where I'm focused at the sharp end of the business. I guess I do three things. I have my own client assignments. I help with business development and marketing of the agency. And I help with training our teams across the world in new forms of media and digital engagement.
So how large is Ketchum, first off? So I know you guys are global.
Yeah, so we've around 90 offices around the world. That's a mix of wholly owned offices and affiliate relationships. And then we have around 2,500 practitioners based, throughout the world.
Okay, so that's a large training effort to be involved in. I know you mentioned the three things that you're doing. So let's kind of focus in on that training. How are you helping your employees with continuous development of their skills?
There's a number of ways. So we have our own university internally within the organization, and that does teaches a variety of different formats. I guess we're teaching against a competency framework, which is defined for every level of the organization and for every specialism within the organization. Teaching is a mix of classroom-based training, where you're teaching in a formal environment, and then webinar-based, hour-long, bite-sized sessions. So those are the two main formats. But increasingly, we've started to use in the last 3 years an online community approach, where we've designed our own online learning platform that brings together people in teams to take them through a syllabus focused on a series of five or six different competencies that might include things like typically focused on innovation in our business, so focused on things like POSA, focused on things like influencer relations, focused on specific new forms of media, focused on planning. So there's those three different aspects. And then I guess, I don't know, I'm hoping one of the things we can talk about is, you know, the community we use across the world globally to as you like as the heartbeat of the engine. You know, we're an early adopter of Facebook's workplace, and so much now of our learning takes place informally across that, underpinning everything that we do. We found that to be really, really groundbreaking as a learning platform.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How did you, so, you know, you mentioned Facebook Workplace. When it comes to these programs, and they're definitely borderless, right? How did you learn that this is the best approach? So incorporating a Facebook Workplace, or how did you know that your employees were actually going to embrace this and thrive and excel?
So I think, you know, it's basic public relations. You go to the media where your publics are. In terms of, you know, the internal publics within an organization like Ketchum, you know, I think the average age within the organization is around 27, 28. So people are using platforms like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, but predominantly Facebook, day in, day out in their lives. They're using it across the web, but increasingly on mobile platforms. So it isn't much of a lift then to introduce a technology like Workplace and say, okay, everything you can do on the public version of Facebook, you can now do privately in the work environment within the enterprise behind the firewall, but get the same benefits of sharing with your colleagues and coworkers. You know, so it's really basic public relations in you know, using a form of media that people are perfectly comfortable with. You know, I think we're at a time and a place where intranets within organizations, you know, are static forms of web pages, you know, are going to die. They are dying. You know, they are a place you have to go and visit, and you typically only want to go and visit when you want your holiday form or a tax form, or you know, you want to get you want to get a payslip or something like that. Increasingly, you know, people want to work in social environments and get the benefit of that. I think, you know, the benefits have just, you know, we continually to discover new things, but you know, I run a community within Workplace of around 600 colleagues around the world that are working in social and digital. People at the hard edge of new forms of engagement between organisations and publics, you know, and that's alive with people from, you know, San Francisco to Beijing to London to. You know, Dusseldorf to Berlin, talking about, you know, different technologies, different campaigns they've seen, different activations, meetings they've had with Facebook or Google where they've learned something, and they're sharing it across the network. And, you know, people then have a conversation about that, and that learning, it just is communicated around the organization incredibly quickly.
The learning potential is incredible when you're opening up to so many different people who, quite frankly, you wouldn't have access to in the past if you didn't have this type of workplace solution.
Well, I think in the past we've used email, but the problem is email isn't very effective. It's disruptive. It isn't very social. It doesn't really enable you to have a conversation. And, you know, that's one of my frustrations about modern business life. I keep writing an opinion article. I'll publish it around every 18 months where I said, email is dying.
Is anybody listening, though?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be, but it should be. It really should be.
I know. I mean, it's one of those, I don't know, it's a necessary evil. It's just, it's like we want to move on. I think the collaboration and the ways that you can communicate today just strip a lot away from email, and rightly so, but yet we lean on it as some kind of a crutch. And I often find it very interesting that, you know, not so much in the internal platforms, but some of the external, I don't know, like project management platforms that you can use, they send alerts to email, which totally defeats the purpose.
Yeah, there is. Well, there is that pain point you have to go through in adopting any form of new technology. And workplace is just the same. LinkedIn is just the same. Facebook's just the same. That you're prompted by email and you're nagged constantly by email. You know, there's when you're implementing a new platform like this, you've got to go all in and kill the email. Otherwise, you have these parallel systems operating just as you describe. That gets really frustrating.
It sure does. So how does let's get into the minds of your employees. Is it when it comes to your training programs? And it seems like, you know, from what you've mentioned, you have a lot going on. Is this something that they're willingly signing up for, or is this more mandated that if you're in a certain role, you need to take XYZ training program? What does that look like internally for them?
I think so two answers to that. The program I described, the community-based learning program that I described, that crosses core competencies and new emerging areas of practice, is absolutely mandatory. But it's not a heavy lift to persuade people to sign up to that. My experience is actually the desire amongst public relations practitioners to learn is higher than it ever has been, actually, in all forms of digital, social, marketing, and media. You know, people are realizing that our business is changing so fast. You know, we don't know what we're going to need to know. And so it tends to be, you know, people coming into the profession are bright, keen, want to learn. So they're voracious in wanting to consume, any opportunity there is to develop their career.
Right. And when it comes to developing your career, you had mentioned that average age. So I'm wondering, do younger and older generations both appreciate this borderless workplace?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is a, you know, from a behavioral point of view, there's a difference in how different generations use technology. You know, I don't want to get into the millennial discussion, make broad generalizations, but there definitely is a behavioral issue around people that had the internet at university. And those that didn't, and for those that didn't have the internet at university, some people that are in the late 40s or 50s, 60s now, you know, they have had to deliberately learn how to use all these new tools. Whereas people coming into careers now in their 20s and 30s, are native to new forms of technology. So you know, there definitely is a difference in attitude and behaviours there. The best example of this for me is the email tag you play with somebody who's in their 20s who, to arrange a phone call. Whereas, you know, I grew up in business in an era where, you know, the primary form of communication was the telephone. And, you know, if you want to phone someone, you just ring them. If they're there, they pick up the phone. If they're not there and available for a call, they push it to voicemail and ring you back later. Whereas this seems, you know, we go through this theater, or I seem to go through this theater with people, a younger generation who, you know, will email you and ask permission to ring you, or you know, just through courtesy want to arrange a time for a call, and it becomes a thing rather than just picking up the phone and dialing. And you know, that's just one interesting behavioral attitude that, you know, seems to be universal. amongst ages.
That's so true. You know, I actually picked up the phone the other day to call a colleague at a nonprofit organization, and she was shocked to hear from me. She's like, nobody uses the phone anymore.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know,
so here's something.
To connect.
If you want to have a bit of fun during the day, instead of replying to emails by emailing back, just pick up the phone to people and see the reactions you get, and everyone will be like that. People will just be stunned that you've done it.
I think that's an article waiting to be written, or some kind of a study. I don't know. Personally, I grew up with the telephone. I love technology, but there is something about that connection. So I still hope that we talk. I still hope that we meet face to face, but I do believe that all of this collaboration and ways that we can be borderless, especially for training, is so good. What about some of the challenges an organization faces as it embarks upon this type of collaborative training for people who are listening? What should they be thinking about if they want to bring some sort of collaboration internally to their company?
So I think you've got to, you know, you've got to consider the alignment of a social platform, which is completely democratic and completely open, with the hierarchy within an organization. So most organizations have very formal hierarchy of management and leadership. And that style does not map well onto an open collaboration platform. And that's where you tend to see most of the tension in adoption and tension in usage, actually. And so you get this discontinuity between influence within the organization due to leadership and management, and influence due to, you know, social connection. That's the area where I am always thinking hardest and pushing hardest against in planning and rolling out a platform, because you know, the people that have social leadership within an internal community aren't necessarily the people who are leaders of an organization. And so I think that's one of the most interesting, that's one of the most fascinating areas. That does not mean to say, actually, that, you know, that leaders of an organization can become social leaders. And that's one of the most interesting areas of study, I think, at the moment. You know, there's some fascinating work being done on that, but it's certainly one of the most, it's certainly the biggest challenge for organizations.
Oh, certainly. Definitely a challenge. And having such a big program in place, and maybe even if you're a smaller company and you have a program in place, how are you measuring to see that it's actually working? So what is success for your programs that are in place?
Okay, so there's anecdotal success in that. You know, we talked through a few examples where information is shared from one area of the organization geographically to another. Also, that happens across disciplines. It happens across levels. You know, so you get the benefit of the democracy of a social platform. And anecdotal things like that happen all the time. You know, there's a great example. I visited our Chicago office recently, and I went on to the Chicago page on Workplace and said, you know, I'm going to be in the office on these dates. It'd be great to catch up with anybody who's available. You know, and from that got two meetings and work assignments. You know, but then also I said, look, I'm interested in going for a swim in, well, I'm into wild swimming. I want to go for a swim in Lake Michigan. You know, is that achievable? How do I go about doing it? And people piled in and were offering me advice. You know, so you get the professional bit, you get the social bit as well. And then there's everything in between in terms of, you know, creating social connections, creating professional connections across the organization, and just working more effectively. If you want to look at hard numbers, though, then, you know, was starting to benchmark against things like the performance of email, internet, and other communication tools. And, you know, just simple things from an engagement point of view. If Rob Flaherty, our CEO, goes on a video, live video, and you know, posts a town hall to the organization, you know, he'll get more views live than he will when a piece of video content is posted on an internet over a 24-hour period. So we're starting to look at the dynamics like that and success factors like that.
Excellent. Qualitative and quantitative. I love that you're measuring. As a PR professional myself, I appreciate that you're measuring the impact. Stephen, I'm going to ask you to hold all of your thoughts for now. We're just going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And when we return, Stephen and I will continue the discussion about technology and collaboration and advancing personally and professionally.
You've been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Stephen Waddington and I were just discussing how the workplace is evolving, it's becoming borderless, and all of the ways you can collaborate and learn through technology. So, Stephen, picking up the discussion on technology, how do you see it sort of affecting the way you build relationships, whether it's with your coworkers, but also with external groups, let's say the media?
Yeah, so this is really interesting, Didrik. I think our relationship is a great example of this, actually. We didn't actually meet until about a year ago, did we, at a PRSA conference?
That's right.
Yeah. And yet we'd followed each other. We'd had conversations on Twitter via each other's blogs. And I felt I knew you already. So that, you know, there wasn't that awkwardness when we first met of, you know, there was no small talk, I guess. So because we had a pre-existing relationship, albeit online. And I think that's a good exemplar, actually, for, you know, how people are using social technologies to create relationships that you know, cross then and become personal relationships or relationships in real life. And you know, it's an absolute example of how I tend to work. Now, in fact, I recommend to anyone, to students, so I've got this role at the University of Newcastle as a visiting professor. Now, one of the things students want to know is, how do I get ahead? How do I get a job? And I say, if you do nothing more and nothing less than follow all the organizations where you might want to go and get hired, and then follow all the people in those organizations that you can find, and just listen to them. That's the first thing you should do. Find them on Twitter and just listen to the conversations they're having. Over time, you will develop a level of comfort with the conversations that they're having, the topics that they are talking about, and you'll find a reason to ask them a question or to engage with them in conversation. That's the start of a conversation. That's the start of you building a relationship and a relationship that, you know, will in turn potentially get you a job. And, you know, I've countless examples of where that's been successful for me personally in building relationships, but also for students.
Yeah, you know, the advice that you gave to your students is excellent. And first of all, I love that you're working with students, always near and dear to my heart. And they're the future leaders, right? When they come out of school and get themselves into the workplace. But the advice that you gave is the best advice for anyone, right, who wants to start a relationship, do your homework. It's a natural. Follow the companies, follow the people, see what they're saying, who they're interacting with, see what the critical issues are, become comfortable with the conversation so that you can speak intelligently and engage the right way. And with all of that information, you'd think everyone would be doing that.
You would, and I, you know, there's this trend, isn't there, to social selling, which is, this idea that you can automate this process, and I don't think you can at all. You can certainly bring structure to it, and you certainly formalize it, but you know, it's based on human relationships and human interactions. I think it's an important thing that there's a thing I've learned as well along the way. From blogging and engaging with people on Twitter, that's simply that humility goes an awful long way. And asking for help, actually, I've done both for clients professionally and also personally. You know, I've asked people for help along the way, and I'm always blown away by the response that you get when you do that. You know, and that I think is incredibly powerful.
That is really powerful because you see the mentoring that goes on. If you think about it, you know, we all have a lot of questions, you know, no matter what role you play, you're always going to have questions. And the fact that we can go out on Twitter and ask a question or be in a blog community or go to Quora or wherever and pose a question and have all of these thoughtful people just jump in to help. I mean, that's mentoring on steroids. I love that about technology. But you definitely have to use it the right way. You know, you mentioned the social selling. For me, when I think about social selling, I go right to the fact that the relationship always comes first. And you have to build your brand, show what you stand for, and engage with the right people, like attracts like, and build that relationship. If you do, and if you get the trust and credibility, then anybody would want to buy from you.
Yeah,
definitely. So, you know, because we have access to so much information and we can go and ask and be helped, or we can help ourselves, do you see any kind of fatigue out there? So a technology fatigue that's affecting folks of all ages. And I don't know, I guess, is it an older generation? Do you experience this with millennials? You know, you're working with students, so millennials and Gen Z. What do you think?
I think that not so much fatigue in technology, although there's a definite trend in people want to get away from it and switch off at the end of a day or at weekends. And I think that's becoming a thing, you know, actively logging off and disconnecting. One thing I do see increasingly amongst younger generations, and this might be a millennial thing, actually may even be even younger, is very care and being very careful about privacy and shifting away from public forms of social media, so Facebook and Twitter, to private messaging, so Snapchat. And I see that. I've got two daughters who are 17 and 18, and certainly they fiercely guard their privacy online. Use private messaging over public forms of social media, you know. And then there's the telephone anecdote that I mentioned earlier. That's very definitely a thing. And something you have a lot of fun with.
Definitely. So, you know, you mentioned your daughter, 17 and 18 years old, on Snapchat. So they're are a lot of millennials and Gen Z there. So I think the Snapchat age group is something like 13 to 30 is the most popular age groups. So do you think everybody realizes, though, that even though it is private messaging, somebody can still take that snapshot of what you snap and send it out through other channels that they're...
Oh, God, They're absolutely conscious of that, and actually very careful about how they present themselves on those forms of media. You know, and you see with every new form of media that comes along, and we saw it with Ask It, and we saw it with Twitter, we saw it with blogging, you see it with Snap and Instagram, you know, bad behaviors transfer to those forms of media. And there's a catch up that you get into the cycle where, the trust and confidence teams of the technology platforms, have to quickly develop the tools to enable that abuse to be stopped. But you know, any form of media can be used for good and for bad, and can be abused, and you know, very often it absolutely will be.
Absolutely. Stephen, in college and university level, they're always teaching about social media and, you know, privacy and the do's and don'ts. Do you think it should start on the university level, or do you think this education needs to start a lot earlier?
No, it's got to start before that. It's got to start at primary school, actually. It's got to start the moment we give technology to children. Even with mobile phones, messaging on text messaging, SMS messaging, you know, the most basic form of communication online, children need to be taught how, you know, the basic basic behaviors of good behaviors of communicating, and exactly as you described, how these technologies should be used, what to look out for when they are when they're abused. You know, you can bully and abuse people just as easily using a basic SMS service as you can with any of these other more sophisticated forms of social media. So it's got to start early, and I'd absolutely advocate that it starts at 10, 11, 12 years old.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So let's jump over to young professionals who are, you know, in the workforce or starting their new careers. What do you think are some of the newer skills that they need to have to navigate this landscape?
There's been a lot of work done recently in digital marketing, public relations, around competency frameworks. And it's something that, you know, our whole profession, and I call it a profession because I aspire to be, you know, work in a profession. It's something that we've slowly come to terms with and realized that is an absolute requirement. You know, I was president of the CIPR in 2014, the UK Professional Association, the equivalent of the PRSA for public relations in the UK. And one of my mantras during that year was, if you want to be treated like a professional and, you know, alongside other management professions, you need to take continuous professional development seriously, and you need to, you know, align that with a competency framework that ensures that you, you know, have the skills you need to practice and work, not only today, but be prepared yourself, future-proof your career for the future. I mentioned up front that I think anybody coming into the, you know, profession in the broadest context, so, you know, creative professions, media, marketing, public relations, does seem to have an attitude to, you know, want to learn and want to develop, because they realize that if they don't, then, you know, you're very quickly going to get left behind.
Oh, absolutely. Do you think that is it still the the writing and the ability to build relationships, all of our storytelling, or are we looking more at new competencies, more around the technology and SEO and what you can do on video? Or is it all of the above?
I think it's all of the above. I think, there's core skills like writing and interpersonal skills, emotional intelligence, and then there are technical skills like SEO and content development, social media management, you know, that relate to your specialism. I think you've got to have you've got to set yourself up against a professional competency framework and, you know, decide what it is that's important to you and align your training against that, align your continuous professional development in that, where you spot a gap, plug it. I think, I also think though that, you know, management competence is one of the biggest areas that challenges our profession. The need to be able to speak the language of the boardroom, but also measure ourselves and perform, against the language that the boardroom uses. So profit and loss, and the financial statements that drive so much of the organizations that we work with and work for. And I think that's potentially the biggest area of potential for public relations.
Right, you're speaking the language of the C-suite for the leadership.
Yeah, so we get into these circular debates about forms of measurement, about forms of planning, and actually, the public relations profession, marketing disciplines, have this inherent insecurity, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very easily solved by just aligning ourselves with, how organizations perform and measure themselves. We have these debates about, forms of measurement that we just frankly made up. They should just be killed, AVE.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of work, some fantastic work being done by organizations like AMEC around, helping to define robust planning frameworks that align, the outcomes of a campaign with the outcomes of an organization, and therefore, everything you do works back from that. And when you do that, it's incredibly powerful because, you're aligning your performance against the performance of the organization, and anyone in the boardroom, any manager of the organization can say, I recognize what your contribution is. And then you can have very sensible and grown-up conversations about, your recompense and your budgets. It just elevates what we do to a whole new level.
Yes, and you mentioned AMEC, which is an incredibly helpful resource, their integrated framework. I actually use that in my classrooms, and I do believe they've updated that. So AMEC is the Association for Measurement and Evaluation of Communication, correct?
Yeah, that's it.
For all those who want to go check that out. So, Stephen, what advice would you give to professionals about career and their personal development? Just some parting words of wisdom.
I learned very, very early on in my career, thanks to one of the greatest mentors I ever had, which is my grandfather, that you should find your own personal purpose, and find work that, do something that excites you, because you spend a lot of time at work. When you do that, you will do your absolute best, and it won't feel like work. You want to develop, you want to learn. That's the biggest lesson I'm trying to teach my own kids, to do that. And then, if you're working in our business, I think the most powerful thing for me has been to practice personally what I do professionally. So to use all these new technologies and media to learn and develop myself, and you know, to explore them in my personal life. So, you know, one of the greatest things for me that I've, you know, developed over the last 10 years has been my blog. And I use my blog as a way of thinking out loud. I write it. Well, I started writing it as a thinking it will be a sales tool and it will help me, you know, win business for the agency I used to run. And actually, I've quickly learned that, you know, it's far more powerful to share ideas, to think out loud, to express yourself, and to use it as a way of learning. And it's become incredibly powerful. I mean, you know, it got me my job at Ketchum. It's got me numerous book deals. You know, I've met incredible people. I've basically traveled the world off the back of it. And so, you know, if you're not blogging, get blogging.
I love that you said that, because blogging is not dead and it leads to so many great opportunities and collaboration, as you said. Excellent advice that you've shared. Stephen, where can people find out more about you and your work, and give your blog URL as well?
Okay, so I blog at wads.co.uk. And you'll find there's a contact page there with all the details of how to reach me. I'm most active from a social point of view on Twitter, where you'll find me at Wads, WADDS.
Excellent, Stephen. Thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your insights, your advice, and for really enlightening us on professional development. Thank you.
Hey, it's really great to talk to you. Thanks for having me. It's been useful.
Thank you. Great chatting with you too. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.